The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Doug Haller, senior writer with The Athletic, today to chop things up around the Arizona sports scene. Always good to catch up with Doug. Great insights. And, of course, you can get to The Athletic and subscribe there. Doug Haller will be with us. Do you shut Kevin Durant down if this thing continues to go sideways? I know it sounds crazy, but is it the right thing to do? What about Bobby Hurley's future and the Diamondbacks? Doug's covering it all. That's why I love having him on. He's a lot of different directions we can go with Doug Haller. John Wilner and I are going to get into the weeds today in the business of sports. Wilner Hotline is with us every Monday. There's none better nationally than John Wilner. And today we're going to talk about the Super League that is coming to college football. And this all took place last week, towards the end of last week, when the ACC announced a new television deal that is going to lead to a super conference between the Big Ten and the SEC. And this does impact Arizona State. This does impact Arizona. We just like to get ahead of the story, and we will do that with John Wilner. Plus talk about the start of the Big 12 basketball tournament next week. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, and through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Jeff Meshee and company and their support. I have had a great last week. I became a grandfather a few weeks ago, and it was the first time that I was able to hold baby O. He and I, you know, is a little squishy thing at this point. And there's just a different feel that comes over you when you become a grandfather. I've had mentors that have said life only gets better as you get older. And I truly felt that last week while I was in Denver, got away, did not open the laptop, didn't do much other than just be present, which I think all of us need to do. Put the phone down, put it all away, and go be a grandpa. And it was cool. I'm really looking forward to watching that little guy grow up. It meant a lot. Saturday, we had the National Football Foundation, a Valley of the Sun chapter, Scholar Athlete Luncheon. Part of this lunch is, it's actually a banquet, but it's during the middle of the day, is we have a couple of distinguished Arizonans. This has been an event that I have hosted for the last, I'd say, 8-9 years. And I really like this one. There's some that you go to when you're asked to host or MC that are just nothing more than money grabs. And then there's some that are in it for the right reasons. And the NFF is in it for the right reasons, top to bottom. There's just a very few of us that get involved, take care, put a show together. Our staff was absolutely phenomenal. Devin Henry did the tech side on it and put the show together with me. We worked through all the details on it. Jordan Spurgeon and Claudia Collins were on stage for a good part of this year's show. Cody Cameron made his first appearance on stage. We had Eliav Gabay there doing some media. Kerry Osip was there doing some media. So, and Jordan was in the crowd. Jordan Hamm, Eric Sorensen was in the crowd too. So it's just cool to have the team pretty much together and all involved in it. And we do it because there's something about a kid who's got a 4-point plus GPA, and he just leans into a microphone. He has a rental tux on that we take care of, the NFF takes care of. And he says, you know, this means a lot to me and helps me out financially because I don't think I'd be able to go to college otherwise. And he's going to go to a community college and keep trying to keep playing football. To me, we just do way too much on look at this guy and all the catches and all the stars and all that stuff. And we don't do enough on the personal development. So really enjoyed that. But add to it, we have some distinguished Arizonans, okay? So Iron Man has some photos. Let's start with Jody Jackson. Jody Jackson is on stage with me. We came up with the Distinguished Arizonan Excellence in Sports Media because, in my opinion, we do not do enough to honor a job that's really hard. People think, oh, you guys get to go to games and that's it. No, Jody's been through a lot of teams, off the camera stuff. Todd Walsh showed up, put his arm around her, talked about their relationship as, you know, the husband wife basically on television with the Coyotes and Diamondbacks all these years. It was a fabulous event for Jody to be recognized because she absolutely deserves it. Charlie Ragel we brought up on stage. Charlie has been in the Valley and in Arizona football. He coached the U of A for a while, but he was at Chaparral. Moon Valley, then Chaparral, to ASU, to U of A, to Cal, to Idaho State, and is the assistant head coach right side of Kenny Dillingham's brain. Man, we just felt like it's finally time to honor Charlie Regel. And he was fabulous. And then we had Kristen Muir come up on stage. Some of you that have been with us for many years know the Kristen Muir story. Some of you may not. Kristen was a kicker at Marcos Denisa on the boys' team. She's the first girl to have an extra point score in a postseason game in AIA football history for the boys' team at Marcos Denisa. After her high school career, she made homecoming queen. We went out and did stories on her. She had the tiara on, the eye black running down, a little ponytail holding her helmet halftime. Can't script this stuff. You also can't script that then she's in a rollover accident, loses her dog, boyfriend was with her in the accident, those two split up, Jordy gets on the story, he FaceTimes with Kristen, she's barely able to move a toe. Now here's Kristen Muir on stage these years later. She actually can kick a 20-yard field goal now. She's a badass. And I just love being around Kristen Muir. She's so positive in everything that she's doing. She was there for the Girls Flag Football Awards. And she's just great. She's great people, and it was great to see her and be on stage. So, just a great weekend overall in that regard. Very blessed. Just very blessed when we get to do stuff like that. So, that was the weekend. And then today, I wake up to the news that Ron Wolfley's brother, and Ron was at the event Saturday. And it's always good to see Ron. Ron is leaving the Cardinals as their Sunday broadcaster. I hear people say good, couldn't stand him. I hear people say love him. That's the mark of a great broadcaster. Some of you don't like me. That's the way it goes, you have to just have skin, thick skin in this business. And Ron has been just a great ambassador. He should be in the Ring of Honor. I woke up this morning to the news that his brother Craig passed away in Pittsburgh. Craig is the equivalent of Ron. Craig was part of the Steelers broadcast team, and that hit me pretty hard after seeing Ron this last weekend, so he is in my thoughts today. In terms of the sports side, the NFL free agents tampering period is, I love how they call it, this is the period where you can legally tamper. Oh, so there's been no tampering beforehand. Of course there's been tampering. There's been tampering for weeks. All these deals just magically happen, but nobody says anything about it. It is interesting because will the Cardinals be the Cardinals and go make a splash when they shouldn't make a splash? Should the Cardinals make a splash in the draft and in free agency of filling in parts? Like I hear this, well, let's go get Myles Garrett when Myles' situation in Cleveland. Just come on, guys. Let's be better. It's like when bringing Emmitt Smith here was a good thing. It wasn't. It wasn't. So just to do something, if Aaron Rodgers wants to end up in Seattle, which would be interesting, or in Pittsburgh, which would be interesting. I think the NFC West, though, is going to be interesting. If you look at what's gone on in the NFC West, the Rams say they're not going to bring back Cooper Kupp. Okay? So they get Devontae Adams over the weekend. Now, this won't become official till Wednesday, but they get Devontae Adams. Does that mean everything is solved? Well, I don't know. What did Devontae Adams really do with the Jets? What did he really do with the Raiders? Really do. And then you have Seattle moving on from Geno Smith. He goes to the Raiders. So obviously, they're going to make a move on a quarterback. And you just look at those two moves, and there's going to be more to come. DK Metcalf leaving the Seahawks to go to Pittsburgh. That impacts the Cardinals. So you have to look at what is going on in the NFC West. Are the Bosa brothers going to be together in San Francisco? 49ers have moved on from Debo Samuel. All this stuff works together. And so, yeah, I'm interested in it. I am. The Suns, not interesting the other night. The Jokic performance was awesome and amazing, just so good. And the Suns played hard, and yesterday they beat a Mavericks team that only had seven players, and they pull away, and they're still on the outside of the playoffs looking in, and there's still hope for those of you that are remaining on the Suns bandwagon. Jordan Montgomery got rocked yesterday, but it's just spring training. And of course, will Bobby Hurley be the coach of ASU much longer? We've talked about that ad nauseum, but we're going to do it a little bit more with John Wilner here in a few minutes. And we'll do it with Doug Howler. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmad. I always look forward to chopping it up with Doug Haller, senior writer with The Athletic, because I know this to be true about Doug. He has his hand in a lot of different places around the Arizona sports scene, and out of that nationally too. I could talk to Doug about the NCAA tournament and all that, but I want to just chop it up with you on a variety of things because you can hit on all of them. Let's just start with who's going to be let go first, the coach of the Suns or the coach at Arizona State basketball? Which one, Doug? Are they both going to stay, or are they both going to be, or are they both gone?
Yeah, I wish I knew the answer to that, Brad. I think it's a valid question. To start with the Suns, you know, I think you got to give Mike Boonholzer a little bit more time, just given his roots and the fact that I don't think Josh Ishbia wants to be an owner that has four coaches, head coaches in four seasons. But I will say this. Were you there at its introductory news conference when they introduced? Yeah. I mean, you saw an emotional coach, a man who said that this meant something to him, teared up. He went through his history with the Suns. I haven't seen that man since, Brad. I mean, I haven't seen he's a little bit distant, especially with the media, but I just see a coach who I don't detached is too strong of a word, but I mean he has not really allowed himself to connect in a way that I thought he would. Not that such a thing is important, but I was expecting something different for sure.
Do you think he walked into a locker room and said, "Wow, I did not know what was behind door number four with managing a super, super, super Hall of Fame star like Kevin Durant"? Same with Devin Booker, or is it last summer the two played in the Olympics and they're just simply in coast mode until we get to mid-March where we are now? I don't know. The chemistry thing, the Bradley Beal deal didn't work out. Nurkic sits on the bench for half the season. You're there more than I am. He just walked in. He's like, "This is not what I was told we were going to be."
I think he walked into a situation and didn't realize maybe how flawed the roster was. They can't win with the way it's constructed. I mean, they're not defensively minded enough. I know Kevin Durant has clapped back on this on social media, but the pairing with Devin Booker has not worked. You could argue about this all day, but two guys who are top 10 scoring, the team should be better. And since he's come to town, you know, they've won one playoff series against a Clippers team that didn't have Paul George the entire series and only had Kawhi Leonard for half of it. That's their only series win since Kevin Durant has been in Phoenix. That's a failure. And, you know, they could have built off that, though, but then they made the Bradley Beal trade. And the question that we don't have right now is, when they made that trade, did someone in the room bring up, like, you know what, if this goes south, if this doesn't go the way we think it might,
right,
we might have to move Bradley Beal, and that's going to be really impossible given his contract and his no trade clause. How far did they go to try to get that no trade clause removed from his contract before bringing him here? Because that looks like it's going to be a fatal blow for the team that's constructed as it is right now.
I don't know if they ever, it's a great point you bring up, if they ever sat in the room and said, "Do you think Bradley Beal's ever going to say into cameras, I hold all of the cards?"
Right.
Yeah. That quote is just like, oh my God. And
he was absolutely right. He did hold all the cards. He still does hold all the cards. And it's funny to me, not funny, but interesting that going into next year when, I think we all understand now that Matt Ishbia is not going to run it back. So they're going to have to make major, major changes. Kevin Durant is the obvious starting point, but I don't think Devin Booker seems untouchable. The Suns have made it known it's untouchable, but I don't think you could, that's realistic. I think if you're really wanting to rebuild, reset, and get back to contention as quickly as possible, you have to consider that. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, no one talks about Bradley Beal because he holds all the cards.
Yeah, the idea of starting and finishing with the same team doesn't happen very often in sports, as you know. You see it, but then there comes a point of, and I give Jerry a lot of credit for this, Colangelo, he had the foresight of, it's time to move on from a player. As unpopular as it was with Steve Nash being out of Phoenix, it was the right move to make at that point in time in the career, and I think you have to always consider someone like Devin Booker. Does Matt Ishbia, though, have the, you know him better than I do, does he have the wherewithal to handle the public criticism? Because he's very successful at what he does, and he likes to let people know that in his own way.
Yeah, that's the big question, I think. He understands that he took a team that was 1 year removed from the NBA Finals. Now, obviously, that next year they lost to Dallas, and that seventh game is when they were blown off the court in Phoenix, is something that everything remembers. You could make an argument that they were trending in the wrong direction, but they weren't that far from that final appearance. And I think that's something that, everyone still talks about. And now, would you make the next step of trading the franchise player, someone who's so beloved as Devin Booker is here? But loyalty has an expiration date in sports, as Brad. We've seen it in Portland with Dame. We've seen it, Klay Thompson in Golden State. You're loved until it's time to go, and there would be a backlash. But I think people want to see a winner here, and if it's the quickest way to get back into that contender status, it might be their best move. Whether or not they can do it this summer, but or whatever it might be, I think it's something that is just going to keep gaining momentum.
Do you think that as we sit here and talk today, that Kevin Durant may shut it down, or the Suns should shut it down, if in the next couple of weeks, the win at Sunday at Dallas helps their situation? But does there come a point where, hey guys, we might be better off just shutting this thing down with some of the players, or do they just play it out?
Well, I think there's two parts to that question. I think if they get to a point where they don't think they have a realistic chance of making the play-in tournament, and that's a realistic possibility given their schedule, it gets really, really difficult. Then I think that would be the smart decision. I mean, he's their most valuable trade piece. You don't want to risk injury. Why would you do it?
Right.
The other side of that is Kevin Durant is, he really is aware of where he stands in career scoring lists. He loves to play. I think it would be really hard to go to him and say, we're going to sit you down. I just don't think that would be something that he would go for at all. I don't even know if they would give him the choice, but I do know I would love to be in the room for that conversation because he would not be down for that.
Bouncing around with Doug Howler for a couple of minutes. You can find his content at The Athletic. It is well worth the subscription price. Doug knows it inside and out, has his own creative spin, as I like to say, fun stories that he comes across. Bobby Hurley, gonna make it? Not gonna make it.
I learned a few weeks ago that this might be it for Bobby, but I got to be honest, when I woke up this weekend, Brad, and saw that they had fired their women's coach, my first thought was maybe this saves Bobby because, as historically, Arizona State hasn't had money to make
Right.
multiple moves like that. I mean, they're still paying off Herm Edwards and Ray Anderson. I've been told it's still owed some money. That complicates things. I will say that this is a different era and it for Arizona State, and what Kenny Dillingham has done kind of showed what is possible if you get the right guy in there. I knew I was going to write about Bobby, so I went to Tucson this past weekend and or last week on Tuesday. And after his media session, we were talking, and I said, "Hey, are you concerned about your job security?" And I've been involved in these conversations before, Brad. I mean, just going back to Herb Sendick, I went and asked him his last year. They were getting ready to go. I think they were playing Richmond in the NIT. We were standing outside the practice facility, outside the practice court, and I said, "Herb, I said, are you worried about your job security?" I think they had been blown out by USC in the Pac-12 tournament at that time. And he got, I mean, he was upset that I came to ask him that question. He his assistant coach Stan Johnson was walking by. He said, "Stan, can you believe what Doug just asked me? He asked me if we're concerned about our job." And this conversation started there. It lasted a couple days. Once they traveled, it continued, and there was still some fire there. When I asked Bobby, he probably knew I was going to ask him, but he deflected it. He didn't get him. There was no emotion, so I don't know if he knows what his fate is. But there was no rise out of Bobby. There was no. He wasn't offended that I asked. He wasn't. He didn't get fired up as he can do. He just handled it like he shifted gears and said, "I'm going to focus on the kids," which is what he did after Saturday's game against Texas Tech as well.
Do you think that he would be one that would say, I've done everything I can do here, I'm stepping down?
Well, there's always money. There would have to be some sort of negotiated resolution there because, nobody walks away from money on the table, and he's still owed for that final year of his contract. But I have wondered. I haven't been out there. I don't cover the team on a daily basis anymore. I do
Right.
watch just about every post-game interview with him. I listen to his radio show, and there has been, I've detected, Just, kind of like a different tone with Bobby, I mean, Bobby, as you remember, when he was here during the 17, 18, Bobby could light up that arena. I mean, he could ignite a place that usually isn't very ignitable, with his actions. And, he still is that way at times with the officiating, but I haven't seen it to that extent. And I do think that's a reasonable question to ask if he realizes, because the Arizona State job is such a grind. I mean, it is such a grind.
We've seen
And
it. We've both seen it. We know that it wears people down. And Doug, to me, looks just worn out. It's like another guy that's tried to get it fixed, and he's just worn out here.
well, I mean, there's only so much you can do. I mean, is Bobby the greatest college basketball coach? No, he's not. Is he great for Arizona State? Maybe he is. But, you can walk in. I've said it a million times. You've said it a million times. You can walk in that arena and tell how much basketball is supported by the administration, how big a deal it is. They have a brand new hockey arena across the street where basketball is being played right now, and no one ever thought, like, hey, maybe we could, maybe just expand this a little bit and have our basketball, men's basketball team, who is in need of arena, play here. I mean, it's just, I'm sure there are days he goes home and wants to pull his hair out over these things.
Before I get you out of here, talking with Doug Howler, the Diamondbacks, and I guess it's the, we, I would believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, we both expect them to have a competitive season, right? Let's just start with that, right? So Jordan Montgomery is sitting out there, and I've felt that Ken Kendrick has played this the right way, and this goes to Hazen and everybody else, but you can say that Jordan Montgomery was a huge letdown. I kind of like that out of an owner, a huge mistake. The fact is, the Yankees just lost Gerrit Cole for the year. The facts are, there's going to be big holes in rotations. The Mariners just suffered a huge injury. So the market for Jordan Montgomery is going to pick up unless he's as bad as he was yesterday in spring training, just one game. But what do you think of the Montgomery situation? Is that the biggest concern to you?
Well, I think when your owner comes out and says what he did, your days are probably numbered. I think, Jordan, by coming into camp in better shape, that was the one thing that stood out to me last year, is a positive. But you're right, the Diamondbacks are in a great position for that reason, because there are always going to be teams who that need pitching. So I think, I don't know what is the problem is, Brad, is I don't know what they're going to be able to get out of them.
Sure, sure.
But it's a good position to be in. I have concerns about, who's going to be the closer for the Diamondbacks right now. I think obviously they have a few candidates, but I think it's always best when you go into the season knowing who your guy's going to be. But yeah, I think that's something that the Diamondbacks have, that a card that they can play at the right time. I just don't know what they can get back for Jordan coming off what he did last year. I think he really would have had to light it up in the spring to be in a position to where they could say, all right, let's cash in on this right now. And then the other thing is, the Diamondbacks are going to have pitching problems too. Right now they have the depth, but we saw even last year going into it that they thought, that rotation was going to be among the best in baseball, and it never panned out just because there were so many injuries that they suffered throughout the year.
A very fair point. I appreciate your time and insights as always, Doug. Stay well. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
There's Doug Howler with The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. Great stuff there with senior writer Doug Howler. And we're back with more after this timeout. John Wilner on a Monday. There's not much better. I could just look across and see John sitting there ready to go. He's got his teeth out, his fangs ready to dive in and shred people and conf. No, he doesn't.
And we're on the same time this week.
I
Welcome
know.
back. Welcome back.
Yeah, I know, right? Arizona finally, we finally catch up with everybody, this changing forward and back and all that. All right, so we have business of sports I want to lead off with, and we're going to get into some college basketball in a bit, but the business of sports is pretty simple. The ACC, John, the ACC, they've got it all figured out. The Big 12, looking at what the ACC did this past week, let's just start there and what the ACC accomplished, what this means, trickle-down effect.
Well, the ACC ensured that it will survive at least for the next 5 or 6 years, right? And that's a long time in college sports. I mean, if you think 5 years ago, this week we were having the Rudy Gobert moment, and 5 years there, who knows? There may not even be an ACC, but they have ensured it's their survival with the settlement of the Florida State and Clemson lawsuits. And the other thing they've done is create a model that we could see the Big 12, Big 10, SEC following, which is part of the revenue distribution from the conference office each year will be based on TV ratings in football and men's basketball games. This is designed to help Florida State and Clemson, the plaintiffs, but others will, you know, it'll benefit North Carolina probably, Miami as well. I think that we will see the other conferences eventually adopt a similar model where it's not all split evenly. In the Big Ten, Ohio State and Purdue aren't going to get the same amount. In the SEC, Georgia and Mississippi State aren't going to get the same amount. Performance, TV ratings, playoff, all that stuff is going to go into it because the big boys want more money and they are essentially subsidizing everybody else.
Okay, so let's drill down and then what it means for the University of Arizona and Arizona State. U of A plays in basketball. I'll use that as an example. They played Kansas this last weekend. Big time matchup. Arizona State plays Texas Tech. You could hear the shoe squeak. There was nobody there. Not a great environment, and the numbers probably don't add up. Those are conference games. But the idea of, okay, we're going to pay players. We want better results. We have to have better games. There's that side of it. Then it falls on the athletic directors at U of A and ASU to schedule. You got to schedule way up in football. You've got to schedule way up in basketball. We cannot have the Cal Polys on a Saturday afternoon at Arizona State in basketball anymore. What am I on the right path here as to what you're pointing out the ACC is doing?
Well, I think you are, but there's a lot of complicating factors, right? I mean, to a certain extent, the schools in football, especially right, Big 12 schools only have three open dates that they can control. Do you want to load up with power conference opponents? Because that hurts your overall record, hurts your chances of getting into a bowl game, hurts the bonuses for the head coach and the athletic director. Men's basketball, same thing. If you overschedule, you can get yourself into a pickle. But yes, generally speaking, if you have a revenue distribution model based on partly on TV viewership, you want to do the best you can with the piece of the schedule you control. Now, Arizona basketball, yes, it is a money maker and it's a value add for the Big Ten. But basketball itself is basically 15 to 20 cents on the dollar compared to football, 80 to 85 cents on the dollar in the media world. So, for instance, in the ACC, they're not treating basketball ratings and football ratings equally in terms of determining how they're going to distribute the money. And I don't think the Big 12 would do the same. So even though Arizona does great basketball ratings, that's not going to be carry the same weight as football ratings.
So for U of A football having an awful season last year.
Yeah.
Okay. And if they overschedule this year in football, you've got a coach there that's kind of hanging on after just 1 year.
Yep.
But they need to move the needle in terms of TV ratings. So I'm just using that as an example. It's, hey, we can't have three patsies off the top because we have to get money coming in here for these games. So on one hand, yeah, you need to win. The other hand is we're not going to help you out, right?
Right, to a certain extent, for sure. But Arizona and ASU both have tons of good football games scheduled against, Arizona's got Alabama in a few years. ASU's got, I believe, Texas and LSU. Those games are at risk, though. Because if the SEC and the Big Ten follow through on their scheduling partnership plan, where there's going to be a crossover game every year for each team, they may cancel the games they have against ACC and Big 12 opponents. LSU, which is scheduled to go to Utah in a few years, if they've also got to play Ohio State in a crossover game, they're not going to want to go to Utah. I think we're going to see a lot of those games canceled on Big 12 and ACC campuses that would be the big draws and the big ticket sellers. So it's a real problem for ACC and Big 12 schools if the Big 10 and SEC follow through on this scheduling agreement.
Business of Sports with John Wilner for a few minutes. We're really getting in the weeds here, but I think fans have to understand when they say the start times, they're not convenient for us. Well, that's only going to ramp up. Okay, the television deal.
Yeah.
And if you're Arizona State or Arizona, you very seldom get national television windows. So, John, help me out understand this. In the ACC world and the world of TV ratings, Phoenix is one of the largest markets out there. So wouldn't there be more incentive for Arizona State? Like, Tucson's not a big market. Sorry, it's not. You go to the ACC, most of those markets are not very big at all. But in Phoenix, you could really make some money off of this new agreement if, in fact, the Big 12 goes the direction of the ACC, right?
Well, I think the markets matter, but the school also matters. I mean, you know, Utah draws more fans than ASU does on TV, even though Salt Lake is smaller. So it really comes down to winning. I mean, that is the bottom line in all this. If you win, you know, you're going to sell more tickets. You're going to get better TV ratings. You're going to be a more attractive opponent for non-conference games. And you're auditioning for, and we didn't get to this point with the ACC, but it encompasses all the conferences. We're moving quickly toward a Super League or more expansion by the Big Ten and SEC in the 2030s. Mm-hmm. This next 5-6 years is basically an audition for Arizona and Arizona State and all the other schools in the ACC and Big 12 to get into the Super League or to be attractive to the Big 12, a Big 10 or SEC if they expand again. All the media rights contracts that are holding college sports together expire in the first few years of the 2030s. That is the next rupture point for the conference structure. And I don't know if we're going to come out of it with a 48-team Super League or with 24 teams in the SEC and 24 in the Big Ten, but everybody else is auditioning. And so you got to win. The money that you get from your conference distributions, which is partly tied to TV ratings or could be tied to TV ratings, would help you win. But it's all about winning. And winning means players, and players require money in the revenue sharing era. So it's all tied together.
But there are conferences, and there are schools and conferences that are in the small markets, Boise State, by example.
Yep.
How does that really work, John? How does that help a Boise State in this new era?
Well, Boise State is you know, they've got trouble, just like all the Group of Five schools, because they just don't have the TV deals. Their conferences don't have the TV deals to support bigger budgets and to support greater revenue sharing. But Boise State is a draw. They've been winning at a high level for 20 years. Mm-hmm. They are an attractive opponent for Power Five schools. They do very well on TV. They are going to audition for a spot in one of the bigger conferences over the next 5 or 6 years as a member of the rebuilt Pac-12. Boise State's in a good spot relative to a lot of the other schools. You could argue Boise State is in almost as good a spot as, say, Arizona when it comes to football. Even though Arizona's got a bigger budget and more TV money, the winning over many years has elevated Boise State's brand. Boise State's football brand is higher than Arizona's football brand. That is going to matter in this next half decade.
It's kind of like Gonzaga in basketball, then, is what
Boise State football, Gonzaga basketball, very, very similar.
Okay, so is there going to be relegation in this new world that you see coming? Meaning a team
depends,
in the first 48, and then they go there and they get their heads kicked in every year, and then they get relegated down in the school.
Yeah.
Do you think relegation is coming?
I think that if there's a Super League, we'll see relegation. I don't believe that the Big Ten or SEC will have any – well, I should back up. They will have relegation and promotion potentially within their own conferences. But the relegation in and out of a Super League, I think, would happen. You know, if you got 48 teams, maybe the bottom eight spots somehow advance and promote in advance and relegate into the Super League. The Big Ten could do something like this. They could set up, if they expanded to 24 teams, they could say, all right, the top eight finishers get a certain percentage of the cut. The bottom eight, a lower percentage, and then the middle eight, something like that. But you'd stay within the Big Ten in that situation. You wouldn't get booted out of the Big Ten like you could get booted out of the Super League down to whatever second-tier conference structure there is. So there's a lot of ways it can go. We don't know how it's going to end up looking in 2035, but we know that it will be very different in 2035 than it is in 2025.
Will we ever go backwards?
I think that there's a chance of going backwards in a certain way, and that would be if there's a Super League of 48 teams. Where's everybody else go? There's still 80 more major college football schools. What do they do? Maybe they reform in regional leagues. I certainly think for basketball and the Olympic sports, we are going to go back to regional conferences in the 2030s. It doesn't make any sense to have all this travel, right? Everybody knows that. Football's a little different. But if the Super League is smaller, if it's 32 to 48, everybody else has got to have somewhere to play. And it doesn't make sense in that league for Arizona to be playing in the same conference as West Virginia, right? In that league, it makes sense for Arizona to be playing in the same conference as Cal or UCLA.
Or NAU or Grand Canyon University.
I don't know that we get to that level. Mm-hmm. In basketball, yes, possibly. Football, I don't know that the FCS and FBS are necessarily going to kind of merge into a bigger entity. But yeah, basketball for sure. Grand Canyon and Arizona could end up being in the same conference in 10, 15 years, no doubt.
John Woolner with us for a couple of minutes. All right, let's switch over. The start of Big 12 tournament is this week, tomorrow, and you have Bobby Hurley hanging on for dear life. ASU fired their women's coach over the weekend. Okay, so ASU is sitting there saying, we don't have a whole lot of money. Can you fire both your men's and women's coaches in the same calendar year? Bobby has a year left on his deal. I could see Bobby saying, you know what? It's 10 years. I've done about as much as I can do here. I'm worn out. I step down. But then he's walking away from money. Where are you at on all this with ASU now that the women's coach is out?
Well, I think the calculation for ASU's administration partly is, can they afford to keep Hurley, right? And I don't know the answer to that. They've got to decide, but they've got to be thinking about it that way. Can they afford another season where they're, what are they, 15th in the Big 12? And, you know, empty seats and no atmosphere or energy in the community, which impacts your fundraising and your NIL. That's a big question for schools these days, right? The imperative to win is getting even greater than it's been. And can you sit by and in order to save, well, I don't know what exactly what Hurley's buyout would be off the top of my head, $3 million, $4 million, right? I mean, the cost could be greater if you bring them back and they have a terrible season next year and you don't know which way it's going to go. So that's part of their calculation as well.
But I think, John, you also have to look at Bobby and how he's just worn out. Like,
yeah.
If you bring Bobby back, it purely has got to be financial. I have nothing against Bobby. I think Bobby's in the worst job in the Pac-12, now Big 12, since he's been here through the years. It's the worst job, and even worse than Washington State. You know, he's just another line of coaches. It doesn't matter if it's Herb Sendek or Rob Evans or Bill Frieder. You can go all the way back, and it usually ends up being SOS. Here in Tempe.
It's a hard job. There's no doubt about it.
And
the thing is, Hurley is running ahead of the historical standard. If you match a coach's tenure, the number of years, with how many times they've been in the NCAA tournament, Hurley is ahead of the game, even though he hasn't done much. That tells you a lot about ASU over the last 40, 50 years. And he's been doing it with a building that, as you well know, doesn't have any elevators.
Right. U of A. Are they in trouble, John? Are they a one and done this year? Is it the usual U of A where the fan base, the Wildcats, all excited, and then it's, oh.
Yeah.
Are they going to go as far as Caleb Love takes them and that's it?
Well, that's the biggest issue. If Love gets hot for four games, they could end up in the final four. If he's 3 of 17, they could lose in the first round. To me, there's two keys for Arizona, not only in the Big 12 tournament this week, but in the NCAAs, right? What happens if Love doesn't shoot the ball well? Who steps up? And it's not just like stepping up against TCU or Utah, right? It's the crucible of the NCAA tournament. Your defense is locked. The opponent's defense is locked in. There's pressure. Who's going to make the big shots if Love is struggling? The other thing is, I'm not sold on their defense, quite frankly. I mean, they gave up 100 points to ASU. ASU's got like two players that are healthy, right? And if you look at Arizona's efficiency metrics on defense, you know, it's very good for a comparative than Division I. But if you're looking at the elites, the Final Four caliber defenses, I'm not sure that they've got it, especially up front. We saw Kansas's front court schooled them. So those are my questions. What happens if Love doesn't shoot the ball well, and are they good enough defensively, especially up front?
Let's check off that. I appreciate your time and insights as always. Great to go in the weeds, John. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout.